in a day and age where thankfully we have a plethora of pain relief options in the form of pills, tablets, capsules and caplets at our disposal to help us deal with pain when it strikes. This has fortunately led to the improvement of quality of life for many people who otherwise may have been floored by intolerable pain. That's on the upside. On the downside, this easily accessible, convenient and often effective method of relieving aches and pains means that at the slightest sign of pain or discomfort, we reach for the medicine cabinet to find a quick fix for the pain without giving much thought to the cause of the pain. It's this fix now, deal with it later approach that often marks the beginning of some serious problems associated with self-medicating. For starters, people have often ignored some very serious health issues by thinking that they've eliminated the problem by eliminating the pain factor. And that's simply untrue, because the experts will tell us that painkillers don't actually make the pain go away. They only mask the pain so that we are no longer aware of it. Another issue is that these readily available and legal drugs are luring us into a false sense of security. We tell ourselves, they're legal, aren't they? And the doctors give them to us, don't they? So they must be safe, right? Well, not exactly. And that's precisely the attitude that we have towards these legal drugs that are drugs nonetheless, which has led to a huge health problem in Australia. What kind of problem, though? A drug dependency problem. A legal, doctor-issued drug dependency problem that's killing people every day and in a greater number than is associated with most illegal drugs and even road accidents. Don't believe me? Let's crunch some numbers. According to recent findings by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, there's been a 168% rise in pharmaceutical drug deaths over the past 10 years. Yes, that's pharmaceutical drug deaths, as in legal drugs. And if that wasn't enough to rattle you, here are more numbers. Between 2011 and 2015, there were more deaths caused by pharmaceutical opioids in Australia than heroin, around 2 to 2.5 times more, with 2,145 deaths associated with the use of oxycodone, morphine, codeine, fentanyl, tramadol and or pethidine, compared to 985 deaths from heroin. Add to that figure the 5,112 emergency department presentations and 9,636 hospitalizations due to opioid poisoning, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out that we really do have a prescription drug problem in Australia. But what really disturbs me about this issue is that it all starts with a doctor-prescribed medication that's taken for a legitimate health reason. And somewhere along the line, that medication started to cause damage rather than fix it. It's actually quite scary how something that appears to be so harmless, something that appears to make our pain disappear, can end up causing so much damage. That's why I think we all need to take a step back and really take a look at how and why we use pain medication, especially the heavyweight stuff that the doctor prescribes, and really weigh up the benefits against the damages. Because every person who's ever ended up being dependent on these legal drugs at one point believed that they were in control, that these legal, doctor-prescribed meds were completely safe to use, simply because they work. I'll stop there for now and give you a moment to ponder on the aforementioned numbers and facts, but that's not the end of the story. In fact, there's so much more to this story, and it's all about to unravel with help from Carol Bennett, the CEO of Pain Australia, who'll shed more light on the scope of the problem but also offer a ray of hope in terms of turning this problem around. That's after the break. Make sure you don't miss it. Attempt to straighten out misconceptions and shed light on the real facts regarding prescription drug abuse in Australia, it brings me pleasure to be speaking with Pain Australia CEO Carol Bennett, who will share some of her insights on the topic with us today. Carol, good afternoon and thank you for taking the time to be on the program.
Thank you, Ella. I appreciate it.
Now, before we get stuck into discussing the topic at hand, I'd just like for you to give us some background information on what Pain Australia is or who Pain Australia is and what kind of work goes on there.
Well, Pain Australia is the national peak body representing the pain sector. So we have in our membership everyone from pain specialists to allied health to researchers, academics and consumers. And really our role is to highlight the impact of pain in our community and to look to solutions to address pain and ensure that we have best practice pain management available to people who live with chronic pain. And we know that millions of Australians live with chronic pain in our community every day.
Well, it's quite reassuring then to know that people such as yourself exist.
Well, certainly it's important work and we do believe that there's a big job to be done. So we really do need to be on the front foot when it comes to advocating for better solutions for people who are living with chronic pain in our community.
Indeed. Now, catching my attention recently were some key findings from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare report, Opioid Harm in Australia, saying 3.1 million people were prescribed 15.4 opioid scripts in the 2016 to 2017 period. Now, what conclusions, Carol, can be drawn from these figures?
Well, the conclusion we draw from that naturally is that we are talking about not a drug problem, but a pain problem. We have an epidemic of pain in Australia. One in five people experience pain. That's one in five Australian adults. That's one in three for people who are aged over 65. Four in five people living in aged care live with pain conditions. Mm-hmm. And a quarter to a third of children and adolescents. So, you know, obviously we have some pain conditions such as back pain that are more prevalent than others and in rural and regional communities in particular. Mm-hmm. But we also see huge impacts of this condition on productivity. You know, with 40% of forced early retirements due to pain, we see high levels of psychological distress and an overlap with depression, anxiety and other mental health problems. Suicidal behaviour, 2 to 3 times higher in people with chronic pain. So to me, it's not surprising that alongside that, what you see is an increase in the rate of opioid prescribing and harm because we have a problem in managing pain, firstly in identifying it, but secondly, in providing the solutions that are needed to help people living with pain every day in Australia.
So, in essence, there's a lack of alternatives to these opioid prescription drugs at the moment, or a sufficient amount of alternatives?
No. So that's the bottom line, and you've hit the nail on the head. Exactly, Ola. You know, we have been working with the federal government to develop the National Action Plan for Pain Management. And in that action plan, we've reached a fairly good level of consensus with the pain sector about what we need to do to address this problem in our community.
Okay, we'll talk about that national pain strategy a little bit more in detail further on. I just wanted to ask you, what patterns in prescription drug use over the past decade or so have raised concerns among the medical community? I mean, obviously this is not just something that arose overnight. It's been happening for quite a few years. So what is it about this issue that now has really got people into overdrive?
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, I mean, as you mentioned, there's a very high level of prescribing, but what that is leading to is, you know, a sudden and very increased level of drug-induced deaths. Mm. You know, we know that opioids have accounted for 62% increase. That's a rise of 62% from between 2007 and 2016.
Oh, wow.
So when you see that level of increased harm, and you see figures like, you know, the fact that they're more likely now than heroin to be involved in deaths and hospitalizations, and you see the fact that in 1 year alone, between 2016 and 17, there were more than 5,000 emergency department presentations and more than 9,500 hospitalizations because of opioid poisoning. And then I think the real figure that hits home is every day in Australia, three people die as a result of opioid use and misuse and harm. And what that suggests, I mean, it's higher than the road toll. It suggests we've got a serious and growing problem with opioid use, misuse and harm in our community.
Evidently so. So what misconceptions or attitudes surrounding prescription drugs could be unintentionally driving the upward trend in prescription drug-related harm?
Look, we think what's driving it is that there's a lack of understanding and knowledge about pain and how to manage pain amongst the community, but also among health professionals. So, you know, when somebody presents, and we know one in five presentations to general practice involves someone living with pain, firstly, that person needs to have solutions available to them around how they manage that pain and understand what type of pain it is and how to do that. But secondly, if a practitioner doesn't understand the condition or how to manage it, and the first line of therapy, as it is at the moment, is opioids generally, then, you know, what we will see is this kind of rise in the level of harm. So, you know, I guess the bottom line being, we don't need to be always giving people medication, or medication shouldn't be the first line of treatment for pain conditions. When we are readily prescribing opioids and people become dependent on opioids, and we know they do produce dependency, then we're going to see higher levels of harm. So we need to look to other ways to manage people's chronic pain conditions, whether it be medication and other treatments, or, you know, looking at other alternatives that might be more effective, especially for managing chronic pain.
Absolutely. Now, to help us understand the nature of the problem, I think it's important that we understand the nature of the drugs in question. So, Carol, what are opioids and how do they differ to non-opioid painkillers?
So, opioids are drugs that are used in Australia to manage pain. They're part of a group of drugs that are quite high dependency producing, so people tend to very quickly become dependent on these drugs. And we know that they also can lead to a condition where people experience increasing levels of pain once they've started on these drugs and then need higher and higher doses to satisfy and overcome that pain. So they're drugs that are very effective for use with acute or short-term pain, but when used over a period of time can actually increase levels of pain and lead to a dependency that requires increasing levels of opioids to overcome the pain that the person experiences. So that's really what they are.
All right. So they really do offer benefits as well as having limitations.
Absolutely. They are a very effective form of pain relief for short-term conditions. So in the instance of an injury or, you know, post-surgical for a short period of time, where we see the problems with this medication is when people are taking it for long periods of time, and we know that it's not recommended for for use for ongoing long-term pain conditions.
Now, most opioid painkillers have always been prescription only, and up until February of 2018, some low-dose codeine medications were available over the counter, but now require a prescription as well. Now, what reasons were there for making these products prescription only, and what results do regulators hope to see as a result of this change?
Yeah, so codeine was upscheduled because we were seeing really high rates of use in the community. So much so that, you know, dependency was becoming a bit of an issue, particularly for the higher doses. But, you know, it was readily being used and in a way that was ongoing. So, you know, that's not how, even with low-dose products, they should be used. They're for shorter-term acute pain conditions. So as a result of that, it was recommended that the drug be upscheduled and available only in prescription. Since that time, what we have seen, and as you'd expect, there's been an increasing rate of prescription codeine-type products being prescribed, and generally the higher doses amongst a smaller group of people. But for the vast majority of people, you know, they've either used other alternatives or they've managed their pain conditions in other ways. So that's probably a good outcome in terms of harm. You know, you would expect that there'd be some increases in prescribing, but, you know, overall the levels of harm are reduced because you don't have people readily using these kinds of medications for long periods of time.
Do you think there's maybe an attitude among people that the lower the dose, the safer it is to use, therefore I can use as much as I want?
Yeah, look, I think if a medication is readily available over the counter, it suggests to the community that it's safe and relatively harm-free. So, yes, absolutely, I think there is that perception that therefore it's not harmful, but we know that all medications come with benefits, but they come with risks as well. So it's about sort of striking a balance between those two things and managing the risks as best as we can. And that's the reason that codeine is now available only on script, because that was a way of managing that broader risk of people becoming dependent or using medications that they didn't need or weren't recommended for long periods of use.
Now, for many years, solutions to preventing prescription drug dependency, overdose and harm have been sought, with many advocating for the introduction of a real-time prescription monitoring system. What does this proposed system offer, Carol, and what issues associated with prescription drug dependency would it help to address or overcome?
Yeah, look, we think real-time prescription monitoring is a really useful system. We do have to actually look at who's using high-risk drugs and how they're using them and what the patterns and trends are. So it is important. However, we do feel that it's one thing to identify the problems and the concerns. And, you know, with all of these drugs that we're now monitoring, and in particular opioids and other Schedule 8 drugs, you know, it's one thing to identify a problem, but we need to actually provide solutions around that problem. If the go-to treatment is prescription medication for pain management, then, you know, just identifying the problem is actually going to create further stigma in the community and further concern. We need to actually put in place the solutions, the best practice, multidisciplinary care options that enable prescribers to direct people to places where they can get good treatment that isn't just about taking a pill. So our concern is that we should be doing that first before we start monitoring the problem. We need to have good solutions in place.
All right. So in your opinion, what challenges are likely to be encountered by the real-time monitoring system, which may compromise its effectiveness and therefore the outcomes?
Well, the real challenge is, you know, that a system like this is limited in its effectiveness if it's not underpinned by broader community awareness, if health professionals don't have the education, the training and the understanding of these issues to manage them beyond medications, and if you don't have effective, accessible pain management treatment alternatives. You know, things like access to psychologists, occupational therapists, physios, exercise physiologists, those sorts of options that enable people to manage on a long-term basis their chronic pain condition. It just exacerbates the problem to tell people that they're taking high doses of a medication if you can't actually provide them with something else that will enable them to manage their pain, because the pain condition is not going to go away.
Right.
And we don't want to see people further stigmatised and unable to manage their condition knowing that they're taking high doses of opioids. We actually just want them to have those options available.
And perhaps even being forced to pursue these drugs in an illicit way because they can't get them the way that they're used to getting them.
Well, there's a risk of that, absolutely, and either in an illicit way or suffering, real mental, psychological trauma and harm as a result of, being identified as a high user and not having solutions that help them manage, because if they have a pain condition, they need ways of dealing with that. It can be very insidious and very difficult to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Carol, I think this is a point that we can both agree on, in that, effective pain management all starts with that initial doctor's consultation. And if the doctor's not giving that patient enough time to explore the alternatives and really discuss the alternatives, then what really remains is that quick fix approach of, just prescribing a pill and telling them to take it and come back and see me whenever.
That's right.
So how does this practice need to change in terms of changing the way that these consultations take place and the amount of time that's allowed for consultations?
Yeah, well, I guess, GPs have limited options available to them. Firstly, they don't always have, a great deal of training and education in pain management itself. So we need to improve that situation. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, even if they do understand pain and how to manage it, they don't always have the options available to prescribe or refer their patients on to. So we need to create those alternatives. We need to create affordable solutions. And all of these things are outlined in our National Action Plan. But they are things like, we have a mental health plan for people who have mental health conditions where they can get access to a number of allied health, in this case, psychological consultations, as part of an extended MBS item.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be doing that for pain management and making sure that people get access to a number of allied health treatments that enable them to manage their condition better. They're the kinds of things that we do need to make more accessible, in addition to raising the level of awareness about how to manage conditions. Because for many people, if they're aware of what they need to be doing early on in their condition, they may well never get to a point where they need that script, or they need to leave work early because they can't manage their pain condition. This is all about prevention, early intervention, and then when that doesn't work, having access to multidisciplinary best practice pain care options that enable people to manage and live well. Often, without medication, but in collaboration, perhaps with medication and other options. And that's the real challenge here, is this is not easy. It's a complex problem.
Yeah.
Everyone is different and, we have limited options. So with all of those factors, it makes it very difficult to see how without those things in place, we will avert the level of opioid harm that we're seeing, because, we don't have the alternatives.
And pain is quite a silent or hidden kind of disability, if you will, because, how do you measure pain? How do you know how much pain someone's experiencing and what kind of treatment should be available to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, pain is hidden at a community level because you don't see it. It's not something that people readily identify. But also, it's a hidden thing when it comes to individuals. And many people are out there suffering pain conditions and living with these conditions, some of them poorly, in fact, a lot of people poorly, but we're not aware of it and we're not responsive to it. And this is something we need to change as a community. When you know that one in five people in the community, and that's millions of Australians, we're talking 5 million Australians with pain conditions, you can't ignore that unless you want to see adverse consequences, and we're seeing that with the level of opioid prescribing and harm. But, you know, it has a cost, lost productivity, early retirements, mental health problems, a higher rate of suicides. All these things are a result of ignoring a condition that is very insidious and has a huge impact on our community.
That's right. How does stigma surrounding prescription drug dependency influence the problem and possibly discourage people from confronting or seeking help for the dependency issue?
Yeah, very much so. And look, we saw this with mental health, where people, you know, a decade ago were very reluctant to put their hand up and say, look, I'm struggling. I've got a mental health condition, or, you know, I'm feeling a bit depressed, a bit anxious, whatever. Yeah. And then that has consequences. Similarly, chronic pain is a very insidious condition. People don't want to be identified as having chronic pain conditions very often because they feel as though they're being judged, as though they look lazy, as though they're not worthy of community support. Mm. And I think that's a terrible thing because it's not a condition of choice. It's a condition people, you know, have for a number of reasons. But we as a community need to embrace people with these kinds of struggles, because if we don't, we all pay a price. And at the end of the day, you know, there is a lot that we can do, as we've done for mental health, to support people better, to help them get through really difficult situations, and to, you know, overall improve the mental and physical health of our community. So raising that awareness that this is a real problem in our community, and encouraging people to support those around them with chronic pain conditions, I think is really going to be the key to us becoming a society that can manage these kinds of conditions, not just in a medical way, but in a, you know, in a supportive environment that enables people to cope much better.
But I suppose also getting people to really understand that any dependency has arise from a legitimate need for these drugs.
Absolutely.
It wasn't something that, you know, you just woke up one day and decided, yeah, I'm just going to take a bunch of these pills and live on it.
Yeah, absolutely. No one would be putting their hand up to have a chronic pain condition. No one would be. Yeah. So, you know, it is something that people come to either through an injury, through surgery, through some kind of condition. Sometimes chronic pain is not even identifiable to a cause, you know, where there are unexplained sources of chronic pain. And for those people, you know, it's an insidious thing to have to live with and deal with every day. Yeah. It makes life very tough if you can't get access to quality treatments and manage that condition well. And if you're further judged and stigmatised, that's certainly not going to help.
And it's very likely in a situation like that where cause is unknown that, you know, you are left with that only option of dealing with that pain with these medications, because we don't know that there's another cause and we don't know how to treat it.
Yeah, look, that's right. I mean, if we could do some of the things that we've suggested in our National Action Plan to all Australian governments, that we raise awareness in the community, we make sure that our general practitioners are better trained and educated and have the options available to them to support people to get access to treatment, and that overall we've got the things in place that enable people with, you know, more difficult conditions to get access to tertiary care treatment, you know, these things will make a huge difference to how we can as a community live with pain conditions, but also, you know, the huge cost, social, economic, health costs that go hand in hand with this condition.
I couldn't agree more. Carol, reaching the end of our discussion today, I'd like to thank you immensely for sharing your insights and views on this very important topic with us. Your contribution to the program is much appreciated.
Well, thank you, Ola. And look, I must say, I really appreciate that your program is raising awareness of this important issue for so many Australians. Because by doing that, you know, we can all better respond to chronic pain, and by doing that, we'll all benefit, because it is such an important issue that we can't afford to continue to ignore it.
That's right. And look, I think everybody should be doing their part on this issue. So it's a pleasure that we've been able to contribute in some way or another.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Welcome back, everyone. You're still tuned to the Muslim Community Radio on 92.1 FM, where you just heard from Carol Bennett, CEO of Pain Australia, who shared some sobering facts about the prescription drug abuse problem in Australia, but also managed to calm our nerves with suggested solutions to dealing with and perhaps reversing this disturbing trend. Causing more deaths than heroin or road accidents, prescription painkillers are looking more and more like the smiling assassin. And if that's not enough to make us look at them with a bit more suspicion, then I don't know what is. Having said that, sometimes they are the only solution to pain that has no identifiable cause. But that's not to say that they should be used without a certain degree of caution, because legal and prescribed does not necessarily equal safe and use at leisure for the reasons we established. Hopefully, with all those insights and facts now laid bare for you, you'll all take a step back before reaching for the medicine cabinet and before taking that prescription to the pharmacy. Ask yourself the question, do I really need it? Or can I get rid of this pain or deal with this condition using some other method? I'll leave you to reflect on today's insights, wishing you all a pain-free, healthy life. Until the next time we meet, please take care, stay safe, and have a wonderful evening.